This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Welcome to a special edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Fraser Nelson. In this political column for the magazine this week, James Forsyth looks at Ukraine and how Vladimir Putin had just deployed 120,000 troops to its border. He pulled some of them back shortly after giving his State of the Nation address, but it raises the question, what is he up to? Is Britain ready for it? And what might come in the next escalation there? He joins me now, as does Owen Matthews, who frequently writes about Russia for us. So, Owen, what's your take of this? Might this just been Putin flexing his muscles for domestic consumption so his people back in Russia can admire how strong he is vis-a-vis the West?
I think that's absolutely right, Fraser. I think Putin is an exception to the Chekhov principle that the rifle on the wall needs to go off. I think it's really the opposite. I think it's a different way of looking at this is as an attention-seeking gesture aimed at Joe Biden. If you think through the consequences of him actually attacking Ukraine, I think one thing that we know about Putin over the last 20 years is that he may be aggressive, but he is not suicidal. And I think it's been made very clear to him, certainly by the new Biden administration, by Europe, that a second run at Crimea, a new sort of surprise attack on Ukraine, is not going to go without extreme and dramatic consequences for Russia, economically and militarily. So I think a different way of looking at the build-up is as a response to Joe Biden's frankly rude and very contemptuous comment that he's a killer. What the response was to the Biden-Putin phone call last week was triumphalism on the part of the Kremlin. Is they called us, they asked us to a summit. It was almost infantile, actually, how the delight with which the Kremlin press people, Dmitry Peskov, the spokesman, spoke in terms of we are wanted, we are respected by the Americans. And the only way that Putin can really get respect is actually by flexing his conventional military firepower. Flexing, not using.
So James, I guess that one thing we know that Putin likes to do is to probe and to test and to see how people react. So in what way do you think he's simply testing Joe Biden and seeing just how the Biden administration is likely to react? As Owen says, when Biden described him as a killer, that was as pretty far away from a Hillary Clinton-style reset button on US-Russian relations as you can get. The big question is whether we ought to pay any more attention to what Biden says verbally, as we do with Donald Trump's outbursts.
I think that Owen is right, that the Russia wish, you know, Putin's view is that, you know, about getting Russia the respect that he believes it deserves. But I think you also can't get around the fact that Russia has not been deterred from behaving in the way that it does by the sanctions and measures taken by the West so far. And that, you know, there are real questions about the West's resolution. You know, I think it's, you know, quite astonishing that, for example, the Czech Republic have expelled Russian diplomats in response to a series of explosions there in 2014 that killed several Czech citizens. And yet there's been no coordinated European Union response to that in the way that there was after the Salisbury poisoning. And I think the other danger is that Russia isn't the only issue the West faces right now. That the international architecture seems very fragile right now. You have got China probing Taiwan's air defences at the same time as Russia's build-up in Ukraine. Now, I think I'm sceptical of the idea that Russia and China are coordinating their actions, but there is no doubt that both would take advantage of the West being distracted by the actions of the other. For example, I think if the Chinese ever did try and seize Taiwan, I think it's almost inevitable that Russia would march into eastern Ukraine in those circumstances.
Right. Now, Owen, I mean, you say that Putin does this, a lot of it, just to make noise. But then again, he did actually annex Crimea a few years ago. There is still a war going on in eastern Ukraine, which has claimed several thousand lives so far. So there is kinetic action, surely. And it's not, I mean, I gather that the Britain's intending to send our troops out to do a joint exercise with Ukraine soon.
the chances of those troops being actually deployed into combat is, you know, not entirely for the birds, is it?
Well, yes, I think you're right, and I entirely agree with James that there's certainly a strong risk of escalation accidentally. I think that there's a major difference strategically in what Putin can possibly achieve in Crimea 2014 versus Eastern Ukraine today. Because if you actually, unlike the situation with Taiwan, which is much more analogous to Crimea, in fact, it's like the errant part of your country that is self-contained geographically and you want to get it back. So that was already accomplished by Putin. And it was enormously popular, not only among the population of Crimea, but also among the population of Russia. Eastern Ukraine is just a much more nebulous concept. I mean, I think that there's, for a start, it's an open-ended war because Donbass is ethnically mixed anyway. It's become less so. There's now fewer people who identify as Ukrainians in Donbass than there were when the conflict began in 2014. But most Russians, polls say, do not really want or need or feel strongly about incorporating Donbass, Eastern Ukraine, into the Russian Federation. It's going to be extremely bloody. It's going to be economically disastrous as soon as Putin actually makes that military move. For all, James is absolutely correct, reservations about the West's resolve and the possibility of the West being distracted. I think that there are several things that will happen immediately. For instance, Russia will absolutely not be able to sell any sovereign debt whatsoever under any circumstances. It will not be able to sell any gas to Germany through Nord Stream 2, a new pipeline, under any circumstances. I mean, it's economically suicidal and militarily open-ended and dangerous. And crucially, differently from 2014, it's also not very popular in Russia. Therefore, I don't think Putin's going to do it.
James, let's talk about that Nord Stream 2 pipeline. We've been looking at the magazine. It sounds like the most boring thing in the world. But this has become an infrastructure project where Germany wants to build direct to Russia. If it does build a second pipeline there, it will allow Russia to sell gas direct to Germany and also Europe, but cutting out Ukraine, giving Putin a far freer hand to cause trouble in Ukraine. The Americans have begged Germany not to press ahead with it. Joe Biden has asked Germany not to press ahead with it. He has been ignored in Germany because the Germans prefer the Russian gas to presenting a united front. Now, surely, if you're Putin, what you see here is the fracturing of a NATO alliance that you've never been particularly keen on. You even see the fracturing of a European response, so much so that nobody stands with the Czechs in the way that they stood with the Brits when we kicked out various Russian officials after the Salisbury poisoning. Theresa May begged other European countries to stand with her. They did. But this time around, we see no unity in NATO and no unity in Europe.
Yeah, and I mean, there's absolutely no doubt that Nord Stream 2, which will allow Russia to bypass Poland and Ukraine in its gas exports to Europe, does undermine the situation in Ukraine. It cuts out the transit fees it would receive. I think there is an interesting case here that the only hope, I think, of a shift in the German position is if the German Greens were to end up taking the chancellery at the election. Laschet, the CDU candidate, has already said that he doesn't see the Alexei Navalny case as providing any reason not to go ahead and complete Nord Stream 2. The Greens are really the only party in Germany that are opposed to it. And I think given the strength of feeling in favour of it in the other German parties, it would require a Green Chancellor, either as because the Greens were the largest party or as a head of a coalition with the SPD to put an end to this project.
Right. Owen, let's go back to the protests in Russia right now about Navalny's imprisonment and his deteriorating health. You wrote in a piece for us recently that something like 30% of Russians think that Navalny faked his poisoning in the first place, and a further 19% think that it was a plot by the West. So are you saying here that we shouldn't read too much into these protests because only a minority of Russians are actually too worried about the fate of Navalny?
Yes, sadly, that's completely correct. I'm afraid to say that as the machinery of repression swings into action, it's very brutal, it's very arbitrary, and it's very well oiled. People are scared. And although, looking at the scale of the protests on social media, you know, frankly, I think what they show is not the strength of support for Navalny, but actually, frankly, the weakness of it, which is a terribly sad thing. But the actual numbers on the street were not anything that Putin is really ready to worry about. And also the scale of his support is, again, very sadly, for those of us who admire Navalny and his work and think that it's his anti-corruption campaign is very important, and many Russians, in fact, believe that he's a true patriot. But that many is certainly not enough. It's for Putin to actually fear for his power. It's not in any way a serious challenge to his regime. I mean, so far as any protest is a challenge to a regime, it's a major protest. But it's nothing like the scale of the protest that accompanied his return to power in 2011, for instance. Then you had 100,000 people on the streets, and you had like a major popular movement. But even that didn't really give Putin any kind of pause. Navalny appeals to a small section of Russian society. One might argue it's the best and the brightest, but nonetheless, actually the vast majority of Russians still are reluctant to come out in support of him and see him as some sort of Western plant.
James Nguyen, thanks very much indeed. Thanks for listening to this podcast. And if you enjoyed it, please do rate and review us on the iTunes store. If you want to subscribe to the magazine, we're doing one of these crazy giveaways where you get a £20 Amazon voucher if you take out a £12 trial subscription. That's spectator.co.uk/TV offer. You're only supposed to get it if you watch Spectator TV, but as a podcast listener, I'll let you in on this secret. I hope you subscribe anyway. Thank you for listening, and thanks to our producer, Cindy Yu.